Bernadette Gold, transformational and high performance coach.
So what inspired you to help others?
Well, I came from a very abusive background, childhood, and went through a lot of traumas. And then when I was 28 years old, my daughter, as I was going through a divorce, endured molestation from her father, which just threw my life into complete depression and chaos. And I realized, like, if I don't start to heal my own stuff, like, we're both done for, you know, because I had up to that point had avoided it. Now, that was some 30 something years ago. And once I got beyond my own issues and now can tell my story with no emotional reaction, back in 2000, I started to help other people. And that's kind of my calling anyways.
Yeah. So can you tell me a little bit about how you got from your own trauma to helping others?
Very unconventionally, right? Like I tried counseling. I tried to go to the church for help. None of those things were working. I mean, they all have their place, right? The way that we address it. But back then, I don't know that they were offering the tools that I needed to get through it. Now, I am an intuitive, so I also was battling, like, just owning who I am as a person, you know, and that was a lifelong struggle. But because of my intuition, I was able to tap into more higher wisdom and was being led to different ways of looking at things. So I took it from a very spiritual perspective, started studying more of the ancient texts and the mind, the body connection, all those things. This is back in the 90s. You know, we didn't have the internet. You had to find things all on your own. So sort of miraculously led to a lot of different information that helped open me up. And I was studying things like quantum physics before it was ever a thing. So yeah, from all of that and guidance from spirit, I started to develop my own process to go through. And then through the years have added onto that. I mean, I self-studied psychology, physiology, spiritual texts, quantum physics, you know, all I was looking for, how do I do this? Because this is multi-layered. Like, I can't just go, okay, well, you're depressed and you're anxious.
Yeah.
So what's the physiology of that? You know, I had to go to the mind and work through stuff on that level, but then start to dive into my own shadows and my past and reconcile those things. And there were a lot of processes that I was being taken through in counseling that was working. Like, it was really sticking me in the trauma. I was stuck there and I wanted out of it. On top of, you know, typical life, because I was such a mess, of course I had financial problems on top of everything else. And like everybody else, you think, well, if I had a pile of money, it would all be solved, right? Just give me the money and I'll be happy kind of mindset. And I had that mindset. And then I learned how to consciously create money. And that became an easy thing. But on the flip side of that, I was still miserable. I was still in massive internal conflict. I'm like, oh, so I can't avoid these things anymore. I actually have to face them, you know? So that's the process that I help other people through, because a lot of people will come to me and they're like, well, if I just had money, I'm like, oh yeah, but it's never about the money.
Right. I don't think I'd be ever happy if I had the most money, just because of, you know, I need compliments and stuff like that to help me.
Well, and I know I've worked with plenty of high performers, like some of the world's biggest names that have a ton of money. Guess what? They're still unhappy. You know, and if you make that your focus and you think, well, if my physical life was just perfect, my material world was just perfect, then I can take the time to deal with what's going on internally, what's going on with my mindset, like the anxiety and the mental circling that goes on that keeps us in that state of unrest. You know, just give me the money. If it were that simple, everybody would be happy.
For you, what is it like seeing that light bulb moment with the clients where they really, you know, become one with themselves?
It's amazing. I mean, for someone who cares deeply about people, and I'm very empathetic, you know, in my world of spirituality, we call that empathy or empathic, right? Like, I can feel the emotions of other people, and that had screwed me up my entire life because I didn't understand that not everybody is that way. And so I would take on other people's emotions, other people's physical ailments, like, and of course, when I was reacting to it without knowledge that that's what was happening, I would do everything under the sun to try and ease their pain. So people pleasing, right? Let me do it for you. Let me fix it for you. Let me guess ahead of time what you need so that you never hit that level of pain. Because if you're not in that level of pain, I'm not in that level of pain, right? Never did I think if I could separate their stuff from my own stuff with discernment and come from a place of consciously choosing whether or not I'm gonna step in at any level, my life would have been so much better. But I didn't understand that back then. It took me a long time to understand. Oh, so even though I'm super sensitive about other people's plights and suffering, whether it's an animal or a human being, I don't have to take it on, right? And I think a lot of times there's a good number of people, especially the young people right now, where like there's a whole generation of highly empathic children and young people that are walking around carrying the weight of the world, and they don't understand. You don't have to, you know, but when you're born that way and nobody ever sort of gives you that knowledge, you think there's no other way, right? And that gave my life meaning, healing other people, doing for other people, gaining their approval through all of it. You know, if they're happy, I'm happy. That was my motto. How many people do you know like that? Right, Michael?
Right.
I'm just here to make everybody else. You can't make anyone else happy. Right. And when your life is dependent on that, you're in big trouble. Because you'll find it at work, you'll find it at school, you'll find it at home. So everywhere you're walking through life in a war zone, and you're not even aware of it.
And you said you work with CEOs and high well-known names. What is it like to, you know, they probably have a lot of weight of the world problems creating a business and stuff like that.
It doesn't matter what somebody's status or title is, because I work with everybody.
Okay.
You know, I work with children. I work with housewives. So it doesn't matter what their status or their role is. Human beings are suffering.
Yeah.
Right. Now, it's this perception that I think society has that the more successful you are, the less problems you have. And in reality, the more of a high performer you are, the higher the demand and expectation and level of responsibility. And as a high performer myself, and an entrepreneur, I know just from personal experience, it's a lonely place because people just don't seem to think that you're supposed to have any problems. And so you shoulder all of that more on your own when you're at that level than say anybody else. You know, it's the same way with like single moms. You know, when you're a single mom, you're mom, dad, and everyone else. You're the authoritarian, you're the nurturer, you take care of everything. You cover the bills. If the kids are sick, you are the one that takes care of it. You've got to discipline, like all these things. It's a heavy weight, you know, and you don't get a day off.
Right.
And so one of the things I've come to understand with society as it is right now, we're a society where we've adapted to a really unhealthy level of stress. But we have not, on the flip side of it, developed a solution to get us out of that stress. So everybody's in survival mode. I've had this conversation multiple times in the last week with people who've asked me, like, what is survival mode? It's the simplest thing. Survival mode, you know you're in it if you've just adapted to high levels of stress, like chronic stress, insomnia, you don't have any joy, you've numbed out your feelings, right? You're going from problem to problem and trying to forecast it before it happens. And if you look at like the entire world, everybody in the world was thrown into survival mode at the same time at the start of the pandemic.
Yeah.
Because everything we knew that we relied on that made us feel secure was removed. You don't get to use your car. You don't get to go to the grocery store. You don't get to go out to eat. Oh, and your job? Now you have to find a new way to do it and stay home and be isolated. So, and there was such an uncertainty and there was such a narrative of we don't know what's going to happen, expect the unexpected, that everybody was on edge. And everybody through that 2.5-3 year time period just adapted to it. And here we are with heightened levels of stress, heightened levels of anxiety, heightened levels of depression across the globe. But there hasn't been sort of a mainstream narrative of, now how do we shift out of that? Because when you get stuck in it and you're not even aware you're stuck in it, it becomes a way of life. And if you look at society, and I'm curious because you talk to a lot of people, right, on your show.
Yeah.
And probably just see it out in the world. Would you agree with that?
Yes, I'd completely agree with that because that's something I go through too, because I think I'm more comfortable with the stress and it stresses me out. That if I relax or take a breath or anything like that. So it completely relates to me.
And then it manifests, how does it manifest? It manifests in physical symptoms, health yep. issues. It manifests in the inability to have joy, right? To feel like you can have peace, you can take a breath, you can just fully let go and sleep and recharge and relax. It manifests in relationship problems because you're always focused on the problem and yeah. you're not able to see any solutions. And then it manifests in financial issues because now you're stuck in that treadmill of chase after this thing to feel that fulfillment and that security, when in reality, it's just the way your mind is processing things and your nervous system is processing it. Like your nervous system goes into hypervigilance. What's the next problem? What's the next problem? As high achievers, we think, well, no, that's just me being, you know, chasing yeah. success. And that's been something that we've been programmed to do as well, right? Even in school, you think about the cycle of what we're taken through in school, right? Like go through the grades. And so you go through several months of learn these concepts and then several weeks of push and here comes your turn, your term grades, like hurry up and study and you've got to get ready for the test and it's high stress, but there's no reward afterwards or the reward is so minuscule and now your body's stuck in that stress mode, right? And then we go through it at school, I mean, at work, right? Now we're yes. like, oh, we got to learn the job and then these expectations and then there's, you know, we have these goals for you and the team has to come, like it's constant. And the same thing happens in our relationships at home because everything's continually dynamically changing. But we have not been given the tools on an overall basis of how to recognize that that's where we are. And then this is how we get out of it. Because we really should not be living in that place of survival mode. It's not healthy. Right. Yeah.
So you're also an author. When I was doing my research, I saw that. How does it feel to get all your ideas and thoughts onto the page?
Oh, my God. So the book I wrote and published a couple of years ago is actually my memoir, right? So it's my life story, which took me 5 years to write and to finally hit the button and publish it. You know, for good reason, because everything from my spiritual journey and the ups and downs of that, and then my childhood traumas, my adult traumas, what I went through with my daughter, like it's all out in the open. So it took a long time, right? And then I put some of my teachings at the last quarter of the book to help people understand what they might be going through. Does it feel good? I still, to this day, have these moments where I think, my God, you still don't know who's, you know, I launched a new podcast this month. And what I did was release the audiobook version of that podcast onto the podcast, like the entire book for free to get it out there because so many people had said, man, I resonated with so many parts of your story. And it made me think if she can get through that, I can get through that, you know? So that part of it feels good, but the little girl in me that still You know, it's like, oh, but is it safe for strangers to know these things about you that maybe you're not so proud of?
Yeah.
Is there going to be backlash and judgment because you do take this spiritual perspective and you are into it? I mean, I've already had, I mean, it's been out since 21. So like, I've already had a bunch of messages, you know, do you even believe in God? And all these questions about the values and morals I hold as a human being. But it still feels good that I was able to do it and I had the courage to do it. And I like the fact that it's helping other people. So for that, yeah, it's good.
Yeah, and the podcast, what made you go that route as well?
Well, I used to have another podcast. I've had two podcasts long, like back when Blog Talk was a thing. I had a Blog Talk podcast. And then podcasting evolved, so I just had a normal podcast. And I took a break for about 3 or 4 years. I needed just to, podcasting is very labor intensive. I don't know if people understand. It's not just easy to have a conversation. That's it. And you throw up this episode. It's a lot involved in it from start to finish. And I wasn't willing to do it for, a few years. So I took a break. And then I told a friend of mine who's in radio broadcasting, he's like, you should have a podcast. And he said, well, it's on my list. But I don't want to do it unless someone else is producing it. I want to share the load. And he hooked me up with a very well-known person in broadcasting that was going to be a producer for me. And we started to go down that route for a couple of months. And then it turned out he was just really wanting to split the monetary aspect.
Hmm.
Not really putting much into it. He's like, I don't do this. I don't do that. I was like, you know what? I can do this on my own. But it was enough to get me to commit to. And I'd already talked about launching the podcast. And I'm one that, like, if I give you my word, I'm going to fulfill it. So the ball was already rolling. So I went, all right, I'm just going to go ahead and do it. So, yeah. And again, the podcast, same reason I wrote the book. I want to help people navigate this really weird time we're in. And start to give potential solutions for whatever it is that they're struggling with.
How does it feel for you when you do get the positive feedback from clients?
It feels good. You know, I mean, I don't, it's funny because I've had to develop a certain level of neutrality.
Yeah.
Because I am a natural born people pleaser. I was trained to be a people pleaser. So when I do start to get this thing where it depends on the positive feedback, I have to back myself out and get real conscious of this isn't dependent on whether or not you have 100% positive feedback. You know, sometimes being the trigger, the negative trigger, or the person that creates a negative response in somebody is what's needed for them to recognize there's a problem, right? So I can't always be like your best friend and your cheerleader. And that's true as a coach too.
Yeah.
You know, coming from a place of helping people work through their stuff, I have to be able to challenge some of the things people are stuck in. And we all have our resistance points and then we all have our blind spots. I'm really good at digging into people's blind spots rather quickly and then doing what I call backdooring them, right? Where I'm not just coming right at them like a freight train and going, this is your issue, you need to face it. I have different ways of speaking to them in a language that they can actually receive it and then have their own insight to, oh, I have that problem. So it's not just me hammering them, because nobody wants a jackhammer when they're trying to recognize what they're doing to themselves to block them. And we all sabotage ourselves.
Yeah.
You know, we're all the same that way. So it feels good when people give me, you know, it's not so much a positive feedback. I feel good, like I did my job, when someone gets the transformation that they want. And for some people, it happens fast. And for some people, it takes a long time. And I've learned not to judge the time it takes for someone to reach it, right? Not to be critical about it. And that's come from doing this job since 2000. I mean, I've worked with over 50,000 people now.
Oh, wow.
You know, through every conceivable challenge on the planet. And there's really nothing new under the sun. It's one of the Bible verses I love. It's like, there's nothing, well, the folly of mankind, there's nothing new under the sun. You know, there's varying degrees of experiences, but in reality, our suffering is the same suffering we've been going through for thousands of years. It's just expressed differently based on whatever technological advancements we're living with and comforts that we're living with in the first world or second world or third world. So, yeah, it feels good. But at the same time, how anyone reaches their own level of resolution and the time at which that takes is entirely up to them. I'm going to do my job, and I'm going to do my job as best as I can. There are some people I can't help, too. You know, there are some personality types, I guess I should say. You know, people with very, very fixed mindsets, people that always have to be right, people that have some pathologies like psychopaths. So I can't help them. And it took me a long time, even with certain, with people with certain levels of narcissism, you know, to accept you can't work with that person. Like, they're not there. They aren't in a place where you can actually reach them, right? So we're just, they're going to waste time and money. You're going to waste time and energy. And it's just going to end up with frustration. And that's the other part, I think, of doing this, being available to help and serve other people, is just recognizing when this is not your circus and it is not your monkeys. Like, step out, right? Refer them. So, yeah.
What are some of the things you've learned from your daughter?
That she was my greatest teacher, you know? And that no matter how hard something seems, no matter how devastating, how traumatic, how much crisis is involved, well, in the moment you can't necessarily see your way out of it, there's always a way out of it. There's always going to be a natural conclusion to it and a shift that happens. But at the time when it first happened, I mean, my entire life hit the skids. Like, I didn't trust anybody. I stopped trusting God and the universe. I'm like, you let this happen. It's your, you know, what have I ever done? I didn't trust myself and my own judgment. And then I had everyone else telling me it's your fault you married him. I'm like, she's 3 years old. Like, how was I supposed to gauge that? Like, that wasn't ever something that I thought about I needed to worry about. You know, I wasn't raised in a time where we thought about those things, you know, and it wasn't readily talked about either. So, yeah, I learned a lot about other people's judgments that are none of my business. One of my favorite mantras that I teach all of my clients is, I don't care what you think. What you think is none of my business, and it will not affect my next move. And by saying that, I actually give the other person freedom to think whatever they want. People are opinionated. They're biased, right? And they have their own judgments. So, like, it's not my business what you think, how you think, whatever the case may be. But if I make it my business, now I'm having to mold myself and become a chameleon to please you. And then I lose myself. So when I adopted that mindset and that mantra back in my 20s, it was a game changer. It's like, wow, you can give people the freedom to disagree. You can give people the freedom to judge you, but not take it personally, not have it mean something about you or what you're doing yourself in your own life. Like, that's huge. But that wasn't an easy, I make it sound easy, right?
Yes, you
do. it's not easy to get to that place because I then had to calm down the emotional reactions, calm my mind down, to stop attaching meaning to everything everybody said, whether it was someone said something or the look they gave you. Oh, they must be angry. Because we do that, right? With people that we care about. Yeah. They look angry, their tone is angry, they must be thinking this, and that's another one of the symptoms of being in survival mode. You're constantly assuming what's going on with the other person. You never really ask the question, well, what do you, you know, what are you really feeling? What do you really think about me as a person? We just attach all of this meaning, and then we start to adjust our behavior, our feelings about ourselves. And now we're just layered with everybody's judgments and we can't move. And we wonder where we get anxiety and depression. And long ago, Spirit told me, which was a great way to look at it, that depression was compression. is literally like taking who you really are in a trash compactor and just continually smushing it down, smushing it down, smushing it down, and no longer being you. And it, there is a certain point, a threshold within all of us, that when you do that enough times, your mind, your emotions are going to say, hey, there's a problem. You know, and then you lose all motivation. You don't want to get out of bed anymore, right? Like all that, you have no motivation to achieve goals, have dreams. That's depression. And it really is just this compression, fitting yourself into a place where you never should have fit. There's the other option of go about your own business. Do your own thing. It's okay to be you. You don't have to fit into somebody else's mold or opinion of what you should be. But, you know, we're taught that we should. That is how we're taught. Like, that is what's drilled into us in school. Sit down, shut up, pay attention. That was drilled in church. And then in my era, it was drilled into us at home. And my dad was a Marine Corps drill instructor. So literally, it was drilled into us, right? Do as you're told, period. End of story. Don't question it. So, yeah.
I know just talking to you, like, relatable things are popping up in my head because I wasn't diagnosed with bipolar disorder 2 until I was 37. So it was before then, and, you know, still I'm trying to get, like, it doesn't matter what other people think, I'm on my own path. But for the longest time, I didn't think like that. I thought I had to be someone else to please people.
Yeah. I mean, that's a lot of pressure. It's a lot of pressure. And even because my daughter, at first she was diagnosed when she was about 5 or 6 years old, the one that's in the book. I have two daughters, but the one that's in the book, Brindy, she was first diagnosed back in the 90s with ADHD, with impulsivity disorder, right? That's what they called everything that was a behavioral thing back then, was ADHD. Like, we didn't delineate, like, autism. They didn't have all the testing for it. And then they treated her for depression. So at one time in California, they had her on 6 medications, and it drove me insane. And while it put her in a catatonic state most days, it made her manageable in school for them. But then as soon as she came home, the medicine would wear off. Her ability to control her emotions would wear off. She would just explode at home. We left the state of California, went to Colorado, and I took her off the medication. And that's the time in 2000 when I really started to find other ways to deal with it. One of those ways was EFT tapping. Was a great way to help her calm everything down. She has since, she hasn't been fully tested for autism, although all the markers are there, high functioning autism. They have tried to say that she has bipolar. They've said we might have BPD, all these things, but no one's landed much on anything. The one label that she's given herself that gives her some level of peace is she's neurodivergent. And that allows her the freedom to deal with her hypersensitivity, like the overstimulation that happens, the meltdowns that come on when too much is going on and she's trying to juggle too many things, the states of mania, where she thinks she can do everything and then the crash that comes after it, you know, and then she's got to isolate herself for 2 weeks just to recover. So I know that one. And I think the biggest thing that I can even say to speak to that for people who are in relationships, whether it's your children, a coworker, a friend, a partner, right? You have to educate yourself.
Yeah.
Like, you really have to understand what they go through. You'll never fully understand unless you're there. There's just no way. And you have to be willing to admit that too. Right? Like, I have always got to admit to her. And it was so funny because when she was little and we lived on my boat, and she was seeing a psychiatrist at the time, we had done this thing called the taco, like the burrito, where she would start to have a meltdown and I would have to get her on her stomach because she would start to hit herself or hit me, get her on her stomach, lock her arms between my knees, sit on her butt, put some pressure there. Right. And then put my arms onto her ankles and hold her down and sandwich her. Now we know just from all of the different research and the things that have come out in the last 15, 20 years. They're sensory blankets, weighted blankets for that. Yeah. And it does the same thing that did back then, but we didn't have those tools back then, right?
Yeah.
But for her, just knowing that somebody understands what she's going through alleviates the self-judgment, you know, and gives her that, at least that freedom. Just, you're okay. There's nothing wrong with you. You just process very different and for different reasons. And it's funny because all of the studies that I've done on my own and with all of the clients that I've worked through, funny enough, the ones that were diagnosed with ADHD or something like bipolar,
yeah,
all of them had a childhood trauma, which means the brain changed and the hemispheres of the brain changed. And that trauma is being stored somewhere, locked away. And so you're literally, your neural pathways have to go around it. But then you add another trauma to it. Now there's very limited pathways the brain can travel. And at one point or another, enough stress, the whole thing melts down.
Yeah.
And then you have your expression of the meltdown. And then you can get it back together again. Right? That sound about right?
Yes, all that's about right.
Yeah, so creating strategies and helping people through stuff like that and just creating that understanding within them and the people in their lives is another one of the things I think is super important that I help people with. It's like, you know, we don't have to cure you of this
yeah.
thing and these behaviors. Like, we just need to learn how to adopt some healthy behaviors and avenues so that you don't feel like you just need to go live in a cave somewhere and that you can't be a part of society. You can be a part of society. But yeah, you have to have your own rule book, so to speak.
What do you do to help your own mental health?
I do a lot of journaling, a lot of journaling. Like, I was just talking to a friend of mine yesterday on my podcast about, because she was like, man, like all of your stories, how did you remember all of it? Well, I've been journaling most of my life. It was my outlet. Like, that's what kept me, at least I felt like I could put it somewhere, because we weren't allowed to talk about these things back then. And so I had all of my journals, most of them, not every single one. I've lost boxes of journals, which is a little bit embarrassing, you know. And then I think, well, whoever it was that ended up with them doesn't know. They probably took them to the trash. But I've journaled a lot throughout my life, and it helps with getting that energy out, being honest about what's going on. But then I can look back later when I'm more focused and go, okay, this is what led up to it. And then I do things like tapping, and I have several tools that I use, but I make sure that I process through whatever it is I'm going through. And then I make sure that I'm making changes in my life so that I'm not just repeating.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, that's how I handle my stuff now. And I rely on the help of other people. I don't try to do it alone. For a long time, I thought I had to do it all by myself, you know, because therapy didn't work and this didn't work, that. There are so many avenues out there. And if you find people that love and support you and have the ability to hold that space for you, you can go to other people and say, hey, this keeps happening. You know me well enough. Like, what are the blind spots that I'm not seeing? How am I continually perpetuating this in my life, this thing I don't want? And then they can give you that advice, or you hire a coach. You know, you get help whatever way. But I'm well aware now that I always need help. But being raised from the perspective of do it yourself, you know, and there was always that mindset, if you want it done right, do it yourself.
Yeah.
Which even locked it in further, and don't share the things that are private with the outside world. That was another huge program that was put into us as kids. You know, what goes on in this house, we don't talk about it, no matter how bad it gets. That was something I had to overcome. And the shame and the fear that I was going to die if someone found out that I was sharing my personal stuff. Now I'm so dang transparent.
Yeah.
You know, and my family, like, my father lives with me. He's 82. And he knows how transparent I am. It goes against everything that he's ever lived. But I'm not living by your rules anymore. You can be secretive and paranoid. I'm not going to live that. Right? So for me, it works because then I don't feel like I'm ever hiding anything.
So how can people reach out and learn more?
You can go to my website, bernadettegold.com. And from there, you can find like the podcast. You can find all kinds of stuff, or you can find me on Facebook or YouTube, The Gold Factor, on both. Yeah, super easy. And then the podcast is just The Gold Factor.